They may not know everything about sports, but the view from their couch is pretty good. So kick back and enjoy a brew, because you know they already are. Here is Eric Dorsch.
They're crazy enough to let me be in charge.
Russ Ivanek.
8 out of 10 from the judges. 5 out of 10 from the German judge.
And Justin Marcus.
Our best defense has been long, hard, and yellow all year long.
This is Armchair Sports Talk.
All righty. Welcome into Armchair Sports Talk. Breaking news, Patriots defensive coordinator Greg Schiano has decided to step away from coaching with the Patriots to pursue more time with faith and family. Not anything anyone really needed to know, but just something I felt we'd lead off with because it seems to be that everybody wants to get the hell out of New England as fast as they can. Russ, I talked to you about it before the show. We'll bring you in. How you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing all right. This is a hell of a day for sports in Michigan. I'm looking forward to it.
It's a great day. And what's hilarious is we're leading it off in another state altogether. So much to talk about in Michigan, and we're not even starting in Michigan.
Good programming.
Yeah, great job. You know what? This is why you guys let me be the producer, and we don't know why. Jay Marcus, you're in. How you doing today, pal?
I'm good. That was literally the first I've heard of that. So holy shit. The ship is falling apart.
I bring you breaking news every chance I can, which is very, very rare. But to be fair, in our year and a half of doing this show, we have actually had a couple times where there's been some breaking news during the show. I would say this is about the lowest in the events of it, but still breaking news anyway, as now the Patriots are going to be on their third defensive coordinator in 3 years. So be interesting to see. But we're leading off the show with the Patriots for a very specific reason. Rob Gronkowski, after 9 years and 3 Super Bowl wins, has decided, you know what? I'm done playing the game of football professionally. He's the last couple of years he's kind of been teasing with retiring, saying I'm going to wait till this little time's passed after the season and reevaluate, and he's always came back. But now he says he's done. He says he's hanging him up. That's enough. What's kind of crazy is the guy's been in the league for only 9 years, and I think if you put that list together, he's probably in the top 3 or 4 for tight ends all time. This guy is just a phenomenal football player. So we'll lead it off with that amazing question right there. Russ, where does Rob Gronkowski fit when you're having the conversation of the greatest tight ends to ever play the game of football?
I mean, he's right up there with the best of them, really. I mean, you can't have a decent conversation.
Words.
Without him. Yeah, I know, words are difficult. I'm also trying to search through here to give you the exact stats on him to see, you know, where does he rank all time.
Yeah, that's understandable.
But I clicked the wrong thing because, you know, passing yards aren't the same as receiving yards.
That's
right.
Well,
you do your
stat search. Let's get Mr. Emotion. Jay, you're a gut feeling kind of guy. If I told you to put that list together, does Rob Gronkowski crack that top 3, top 4 kind of area?
Undoubtedly. I think because we're in a different time with football now where, you know, offense is becoming king out of everything. Like, in my perspective and, you know, synopsis of NFL, like, he's the best in my mind. Now, you have to compare it to different times of rules in the league, but I'm convinced the man's half robot. Like, he's fallen apart in so many different ways, and yet he still shows up and does his job. Like, I just, class act. I hands down, he's the best in my mind. Like, okay. Not even looking at stats yet, just from the optics of everything, yeah, Gronk is the best.
And I'm going to hit this ahead of time because I'm mentioning something we don't mention, so I'm going to hit it.
Oh, good for you!
Jay, what's this do to your fantasy team? I mean, was Rob someone that you were counting on week in and week out?
I've never had the pleasure of having him on my squad because I'm too busy not drafting running backs as well. too busy grabbing wideouts in PPR heavy leagues, but it sucks. It's already slim pickings in that era or in that area already. So that blows for me fantasy wise.
Gotta be tough. Absolutely.
What a man though.
Russ, you got anything for us?
Yeah, I got that. But I'll jump in on that last question. I am thrilled that he's gone because he has submarined my team every time I've picked him.
Oh, okay.
I have made that dumb decision 3-4 years. And you know what he does? Gronk gronks. And he gets injured. And he's great for like three, four weeks. So I'm like, yeah, I'll keep him on my team. He'll get healthy. Meanwhile, I just drop and drop and drop. So thank you for saving me from myself, Gronk. You've earned it.
Okay.
But going back to his stats, he is ninth all-time in tight ends for receiving yards, playing considerably less games than most of them. He is the only one in that top 10 with less than 150 games played, only at 115, which is half almost of what the next guy in line does. He is an absolute monster. If he had played longer, we could maybe talk about him being the best of all time. But I'm still going to put a guy like Tony Gonzalez, who did it for so much longer, I'm still going to put him a little bit above.
Okay, that's fair. That's absolutely fine. Well, Russ, since I asked Jay the fantasy one, I'll let you go next here. But and this is more just kind of an opinion question, so believe me, there's no wrong answer, but if you don't tell me the one I like, it's going to be wrong. This was a question that came to me when I heard you retired. I jotting down some questions for the show. I guess the way to ask it is, was Gronk a once-in-a-lifetime kind of tight end, or was he just the future of tight end? He came 10 years before everyone else is going to start coming along. Was he that guy who kind of set the standard for what tight ends need to be now, and it's going to take a few years for them to come along? Or was he just one of those guys, if we watch football for the next 80 years, we're never going to see another Rob Gronkowski out there?
I think he's at the very least once in a generation, and the closest thing we're probably ever going to see is guys like Travis Kelce and George Kittle.
Okay.
I don't think we're going to see someone as big as him who blocks as well and catches the ball as well as he did. And part of that is his own body couldn't handle doing it.
Yeah.
So I really doubt that we're going to find another player, because humans aren't supposed to do that. And you saw that by his injury history and his early retirement. We're going to get more specialized, I think, in tight end. You'll have your blocking guy, you'll have your receiving guy, and neither will quite be the complete package that Gronk was, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, the only reason I ask is, and this is it's a different sport entirely. Still physical take on the body, but nowhere near what Gronk did. The reason I say it is, like, you look back to like the late 80s, early 80s. Everybody said there's nobody that's 6'8" that can handle a basketball and be able to play outside and move around fluently. And now you look at the NBA, and it seems like 9/10 of the league is 6'8" guys who can handle the ball, move fluidly, and do all that. And that's in the development of the game. But you look at a guy like Magic Johnson. When he came into the league, everybody said, okay, you can play point guard. You won't be a point guard a few years in. They're going to move you somewhere where your size plays that advantage. Now he's the greatest of all time. Fast forward 10, 15 years, you've got Carmelo, you've got LeBron, you've got the Greek Freak, you've got we're going to talk about one of them today. Luka Doncic is almost 7 feet tall, but he plays on the perimeter like it's nothing. So I'm just saying, obviously I think Gronk is a once-in-a-lifetime guy, but I also could see him being that trailblazer for that more, big body guy that, like you said, like Travis Kelce and all that. Will there be another Gronk? No, same as there'll never be another Magic Johnson. But I think that it's comparable in that way of, like, we're seeing the next wave of what, the game develops. We're seeing the next wave. For a while, it was everybody wanted to have that big 6'6 wide receiver. When Calvin came along, everybody was looking for that. There's never going to be another Calvin. So I see it in that way. That would be more the way of phrasing it. But I agree with you that to say that we'll see another Rob Gronkowski is very, very, very unlikely. Very unlikely.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a freak in every sense of the word.
Oh, absolutely. Jay, mine for you. Odds we actually see Rob Gronkowski come back to the NFL. We're seeing Jason Witten do it with the Cowboys. Do we think that this is maybe one of those things where once training camp, because his agent, Drew Rosenthal, said he had a plan in place that Gronk wasn't going to play in the preseason and training camp and was just going to come back and play when the season was ready to go. Odds are we see maybe Gronk when it gets to be late August, early September, him kind of chomping at the bit going, you know what? I'm coming back. I can't sit out. I'm coming back.
No, they're going to retire his series of robot and he's going to go off and do something. No, seriously, he's going to get picked up in some kind of media capacity, some kind of broadcasting, the Barstools of the world.
I was going to say, I'm amazed Barstool hasn't like already announced that they're offering him a butt ton of money to do something.
If I ever came across that news, I wouldn't be surprised. He's got too much of a brand appeal behind him with the partying, the supermodel girlfriend.
Exactly.
he can make millions and not have to sacrifice his body anymore, and he'd be dumb to come back and play football. So he'll go make millions other ways.
Okay. I don't want to get too far off topic because I do have one more question regarding the Patriots, and then we'll move on to more local things. But did either of you guys hear or read the thing about how Tony Romo basically wants like NFL money to do broadcasting for the NFL? He wants $10 million a year. Am I the only one who thinks, hey, Tony, you had your chance in the NFL to make that kind of money. You don't get to do this for 1 year and then say, oh, hey, look, I want all the money.
I don't blame him for trying.
Well, I don't blame anyone for trying.
But, I mean, look what Gruden got. How dumb did it sound to have Gruden go from jumping these QB camp segments that he would do to having pretty much sole control over the Raiders for $100 million? Like, yeah, it's crazy money right now.
Oh,
I don't blame Romo.
It is. But, I mean, I guess for me it's like you had a great year and you had that –
oh yeah,
he has that ability to get you in the head of the NFL, like of the players, of you know, because he was able to call plays, and that's just from instinct. If you played for so long, you kind of have an idea. But you got guys like Jim Nance, and for the how much I hate him, Joe Buck, who have done this for a long time and are, other than Joe Buck, good at what they do. And is it obvious I don't like Joe Buck? I'm just checking, but they're good at what they do. Like, you have to prove it a little bit. It's the same reason you don't, as a rookie quarterback, you don't come in the league, have one hot year, and then all of a sudden be able to look at him and go, oh, I just, you know, like Baker, I just broke the touchdown record for rookies. I think my contract needs to go from $2 million a year to $20 million a year. You have to at least do a little bit more to, like, prove your worth.
I blame him. No, I blame him 100%. And I'm all about dudes getting paid money, but I like athletes when they want to get money and they deserve it. They go out and get it. He's in broadcasting now. That's like if you work at a courthouse and you're the janitor and the next day you want to be the judge. Like, you don't get to do that. He's probably like, on his resume is like, well, I know how plays are going to happen. Great, go be a coordinator. Go back into the sport. You don't get to sit up in a press box and make that kind of money. That's stupid.
You know what? That was really funny. That earns a J laugh.
Jesus Christ.
And that's a new thing on the show. You say something funny, you earn a J laugh.
I'm never saying something funny again.
Exactly. Keep this as serious as you can. I agree with you, Jay, though. It's you have to a little bit more time. You get into this 5-6 years from now and you're consistently one of the best in the business doing it, then yes, come contract time, you can look at them and go, listen, look at your ratings the last 6 years when I called games. There's something there. I think we need to look at this, and I may need a little bit of a boost. After 1-2 years, no, you're not there yet. So it was a little bit to me, because Jay, you mentioned how Gronk's going to get offered money to do all these things, and it just came to my head that I read that the other day, and my first thought was, this guy's crazy. He's just absolutely crazy. So last thing before we move on to Detroit sports, Russ, I'll let you go first here. It's a two-parter, but it's pretty simple. What's this do for the New England Patriots going into this year? And two, would it be any all surprise to see the Patriots either trade for a big name tight end and or trade up to try to get a hold of a tight end in the draft?
I'll say it surprisingly probably doesn't do very much for them, because I think they will make a move. So answer number one is not a lot of impact, because answer number two is yes, they're going to make some kind of move there. It's not exactly their way to go and go grab a big name, so they're not going to go get someone who's old and baked like Jimmy Graham, or I don't think they're going to be able to pry away someone who's in their prime, but I bet they're drafting at least two tight ends in this draft. That's how they got Gronk. They drafted him and Aaron Hernandez.
Yeah, yeah.
And that one didn't work out so well, but I'm expecting between the second and fourth rounds, probably two tight ends again, and they're going to find something, because they always do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's right. Jay, kind of same opinion there, or are you of a different mindset?
See, I just feel like they could do the complete opposite of what we think they're going to do and still succeed. Like, it's one of those things where it doesn't matter how you get to your destination, you're still going to get there. I couldn't tell you who the second string tight end for the Patriots is right now. I don't know if you guys know it.
Greg Schiano.
No. Oh, this is going to bug me now. I do remember they had another one, and I'm going to blank on his name. So, but yes, I do know who it is. I just can't remember his name at this particular moment.
I just think either way, whether they've got him groomed to succeed or they do what Russ is alluding to, I have like nothing but faith that they'll do it correctly. So it's just they always have success, so they'll succeed.
I'm of the mindset that I do think there will be a move made. It's just a matter of how, whether it's moving up in the draft or moving, you know, to trading and trying to get an established tight end. I mean, this is the Patriots. For right now, this is a team that most any player is going to want to try to get on because it's a good chance you're going to earn a ring or two. So we'll see what happens.
Can I do some breaking news real quick?
I think you're going to break what I was just about to break, so go ahead and break it, Jay.
Zimmerman just lost his perfect game, his no-hitter. So
yeah, they both did.
That on opening day.
Tigers got two hits. Blue Jays got one.
It's on an error, nonetheless, so that's great.
Yeah. Steven Anderson, Jacob Hollister, Ryan Izzo, and Matt Lacasse. Don't know who any of them are, but those are the tight ends currently on the New England Patriots roster.
Excellent.
So,
yep.
For whatever that's worth, for whatever it's worth to anyone, that's what. Yeah, but at the same time, I do agree with moves. But I would like to point out how, like, in the span of time that we're remembering the Patriots, obviously we probably go back maybe to when Favre beat them in the Super Bowl in the late '90s. From there on, how many times can we say though that some big name guy has departed from New England? And they haven't missed a beat. I mean,
I know.
Randy Moss, Wes Welker, these guys left to go to go elsewhere, and it was okay. Insert name here. You're looking at Wes Welker leaves, Julian Edelman all of a sudden becomes Brady's new favorite person. Randy Moss leaves, and insert other receiver whose name I don't know because he only played for 3 years and probably had like 3,000 yards receiving in those 3 years. So Greg Schiano was actually on the New England Patriots since Tom Brady came in. He just quits and then comes back in a different capacity, so you don't catch on.
That's not that far from the truth.
It's not at all. It really isn't. It's like in the mafia movie Casino, where they tell him he doesn't have to have a license to work in the casino. He just has to keep reapplying for new jobs, so his name goes to the bottom of the list and he can't get in trouble. That's what Schiano does. He just keeps reapplying. So we'll see what happens. Obviously, Jay took the transition there. We're going to talk Pistons first, but watching for that no-hitter would have been quite awesome. But hopefully, I don't care about the no-hitter now. Let's just get the win because there are still no runs in this game, and we're in the eighth inning. So let's see what happens there. Real quick, over the last couple of weeks, we've been trying to work it in, and I've worked it in very poorly, but I want to actually work it in this week, and that's talking about the Detroit Pistons. Playoffs are coming. This is a team that literally is 500, 37-37. They have a game lead over the Miami Heat, who are number 9 in, so they're just out of the playoffs. Playoffs started today. We're back to the Pistons. Would have to take on the Toronto Raptors. Team that they've actually fared pretty well against this year. They won the last game. But, Russ, right now we're on a little bit of a West Coast swing where we can all agree the basketball is a little better out there right now.
Yeah,
the West, just a bit. And the Pistons have lost 3 in a row to the Portland Trailblazers, the Golden State Warriors, and the Denver Nuggets. And it's one of those things where I posed this question earlier a couple weeks ago. And I have to ask it again now. Do the Pistons look good, or do they just look Eastern Conference good? It's a valid question, though. We look good when we play East Coast teams, but you get out West, and all of a sudden we're getting our butts whooped. And I'm looking at this right now. We still got 3 more West Coast games. The rest are all East Coast teams, but we have to play the Pacers back-to-back. We have to play the Magic tonight. And then we end the season with the New York Knicks, and it's just a team that's also terrible. But it's just one of those things where we're barely in a position to be in the playoffs right now. And I'm just starting to wonder if this is a team that looks good or looks Eastern Conference good.
I'll say they looked good for about 2 weeks there when they were winning like 8 games out of 10 for a good stretch.
Yeah.
But no, overall they are Eastern Conference pretty good.
Uh-huh.
Like this is a team that is shooting 29th in field goal percentage, 21st in 3-point percentage. You don't get to shoot that bad from the field and be called a good team.
Mm-hmm.
If the Eastern Conference wasn't so bad, playoffs wouldn't even be in the conversation. Like this is, it's almost frustrating because it's a bad team, but they're not going to be bad enough to get anywhere near a top draft pick because, wow, basketball really embraces the tank. But they're also in the playoffs, so you want to see them try to win. But they're back into this trend of beating non-playoff teams in Toronto and losing to playoff contenders. And luckily, the NBA has way more non-playoff caliber teams than they do playoff teams, and that's how they've gotten to be around 500. It's frustrating, but at least we're going to see the playoffs.
Yeah, that's true. Now, you actually used the word I wanted to use in the transition here because we all know Jay. Jay's on board for the lose for Hughes. Take it as low as you can. Crash and burn this mother. Jay, if you're the Pistons, you're a game out, you're a game away from, if you lose, potentially not making the playoffs. Then all those attempts to tank are pointless. You went and sold out and tried to win, and tried to make the playoffs, knowing you're probably not going to win a championship. I mean, obviously anything can happen, but you're probably as long a shot as long shots get. If this team does what they did, goes on that streak, wins enough to get into the playoffs, and then ends up losing out and not making it to the playoffs, I mean, you're Mr. Tank. What's your impression here of that team if we miss out on the playoffs and are almost guaranteed not to have a top five pick?
Yeah, my first note for the Pistons right now,
yeah,
is I'd rather them not make the playoffs than get embarrassed in the first round. Like,
really? Okay.
I equate being a 500 team like being in the friend zone. Like, you're not really getting over that hump to get in your hump, and you're not, you know, bad enough that you're off the radar. Like, it's why sit at mediocrity? And I think we can all agree that, like, it's like, all right, be good or be bad, which, you know, that's easily talking about both ends of the spectrum pretty quickly. Someone has to fill the void. I hate the fact that we are that team that fills that void. It's just like, I'm split. I want to see downtown area have more games and have more business and people get into the arena and be the first playoff game in the new arena. But it's like, no, because we're going to get bounced so early. So I'd rather them not be a 500 team like anyone in Detroit would like see them not be. But just don't make it. Don't embarrass yourselves. Wait till you're actually good to make the playoffs.
Okay. Jay, I liked your comparison so much. Guess what you earned?
Don't.
Jay is 2 for 2 today on getting laughs. It's great. I like that comparison. I'm with you on it. See, the Detroit fan in me, the always wanting to see our teams do better and be better kind of thing, wants me to see them make the playoffs because, like we're going to talk about March Madness here in a few minutes. It's that same thing. Once you're in, you at least have a shot. Now, how good of a shot you have, you know, is night and day, but you have a shot. It's the same as any team that gets into that bracket for March Madness. Statistically, you have a chance of winning the national championship. Some teams are obviously much better than others for it, but any one of those 16 seeds can still technically go the distance, win the championship. So I want to see you get in because guess what? The math is still there that there's a chance you can do it. Not likely, but there's a chance. So at least you're there to say you have a chance. Not making the playoffs, you have no chance. You are full tank. Look at the, you know, example B Red Wings. But it's just one of those things where the optimist and the fan in me wants this to happen, wants them to get in the playoffs. You're gonna get bounced round one. We all know that. You're going to get bounced round one, but at least there's a chance. Cinderella stories have happened. Miracles have happened. It's a very, very, very small chance, but there's still a chance.
But Eric, Russ might be able to give me the numbers on this, but wouldn't you rather have your chance in the lottery than your chance in the playoffs?
I think I would, but at the same time, what I'm trying to say is, to put it in comparison, so Red Wings next year. We all know we're on for full tank this year and all that, but Red Wings next year come in, they go 500, or at least they go enough to be a bottom seed making it into the playoffs. they at least get a playoff chance. But they did favorable against the teams they would have to face. You're saying you would rather see them just all out miss out than at least get in and let there be that chance. I know we've lost in the first round quite a bit the last few years when we did make the playoffs, but there's still that chance. You just need to go on that run. You need to play well. You're saying you'd rather see the tank and the no-go than at least them get in and give them a shot. There's a chance they could go 4-0 sweep, but there's also a chance they could go in, they could win a Stanley Cup. It's not out of the realm of possibility, Jay.
Hockey's a little different just because look at the Kings, right? Like an 8th seed is going to win in hockey more so than they're going to win in the NBA. But I don't know. I just being on that line of mediocrity where you're good enough but not good enough or not bad enough, it's just like get off the line and always head towards the bottom of the barrel.
Okay.
At least in my eyes.
All right, so there's a tiebreaker here. Russ, you're the tiebreaker on this.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a fan, which we all are, we make no, mm-hmm. we don't hide that we're all Detroit sports fans.
Right.
Be it Pistons, be it Red Wings, would you rather see this team make the playoffs just barely and have that chance, or miss out on the playoffs and there's no chance you're still, you're sitting there picking another team to enjoy for the next month?
Well, I guess I'll answer by saying those two teams are in two different contexts because, well, we've seen very recently the Red Wings get into the playoffs and get embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Tampa. We're going to take your GM.
Yep.
but the Pistons are in a different spot. They haven't been making the playoffs recently. And to tank in the NBA, you have to be good at tanking. You can't just be a bad team and end up with a top pick. Like, let's take the Lakers, for example, who have right now the 5th worst odds to get the number one overall pick. Better odds than if the Pistons were to fall out of the playoffs, they would have. They have a 3% chance of getting the top pick. They have a 6.3% chance of getting a top 2 pick. Like, that's minuscule. That's almost something where you shouldn't even entertain the thought of it. So are the Pistons going to be, do they even have the option to be bad enough to get a top pick? No. No, they don't. Not with Blake Griffin, not with Andre Drummond,
yep.
As much as we rag on Drummond sometimes.
We do.
So right now, in this context, I want to see the Pistons make the playoffs. Hopefully they line up against Toronto, because I think that's the only team that won't just flat out embarrass them, because apparently they match up very well with the Raptors.
Mm-hmm.
But typically, yeah, I'm embracing the tank, but it's just so much harder when you're stuck with these big contracts of guys that are good enough. I kind of split the difference there, but if we're talking about the Pistons, I want to see them make the playoffs, and I want to see them take a game. Take game one. Just give me a little false hope.
Okay, that's fair. It's absolutely fair. We're going to move on to Rookie of the Year. It's we haven't had this discussion before, but they're, to me, are two guys that are front runner. Quick update, after 7 innings and only 1 hit given up on 4 strikeouts, they have decided to pull Zimmerman and put in Jimenez. So pitching change for the Tigers, first one of the year. Zimmerman, not a bad outing for his first outing. We're going to touch on the Tigers here in a few minutes. So real quick, let's talk Rookie of the Year. In my eyes, there are only two people that really can be discussed. There have been some players. Obviously, if you guys got one, bring it up. But for me, it's between the Mavericks' now new star player. Dirk's reaches, coming to the end. They finally found the guy to take over the rings and be the new big name in Dallas. That's Luka Doncic, who's averaging 21.1 points a game, 7.6 rebounds, just shy of 6 assists. Youngest player to record 3 triple-doubles in his rookie, or youngest player ever to do it. Third most triple-doubles by a rookie all time. The Mavs are currently 29-45. So that would be the first guy up for debate. Second, Oklahoma Sooners former point guard and now Atlanta Hawks point guard, Trae Young. 18.
Had to fit that in there.
I had to get it in somehow. My wife will be a lot happier because of it. 18.9 points a game, 3.6 rebounds, just shy of 8 assists with 7.9, 33.7 3-point percentage. 8 games this year of 30-plus points. The Hawks are currently sitting at 27-48, so very similar records. But the little thing I found that was interesting, Trae Young was actually drafted by the Dallas Mavericks and then traded to Atlanta for Luka Doncic, the guy, the other guy we're talking about. So little fun fact there. You think about it this way. They were both going to be good no matter where they went, but this kind of was a perfect fit. Hawks needed that new big scorer. They got it. Luka's kind of that all-around player to, you know, to take over for Dirk. That's what they needed. They got it. So it's just kind of interesting. Jay, you said you didn't know what Rookie of the Year was when we said Roy in the text, so we'll let you lead it off. If you were casting a vote, if you were, you know, one of the people that has a deciding factor in this, who are you voting for Rookie of the Year in the NBA?
My NBA Roy would be Trae Young. One stat that blew my mind when I figured out what a Roy was.
Okay.
Actually, two things blew my mind. So be careful with my mind here because I'm not a big NBA fan, so I'm going to go a little bit off the road.
Okay.
First of all, what the hell Vince Carter is still playing basketball? Blew my mind. Okay? So that was a little crazy. But the reason why I would vote for Trae Young, if I had a vote, he's had his sixth 30-point 10-assist game, and it is it moved him past Michael Jordan and Steph Curry for second most by a rookie in NBA history.
Mm-hmm.
That right there, being in the same breath as those two dudes, I was like, fine, you win. Like, it was just like a simple vote. I think that's astonishing what he's done. Now, the other thing that you just told me about the trade between the two guys and the teams, that also blows my mind that potentially they both could have been on the same team together. So that, I don't know. Between that and Vince Carter, and then just the one stat I looked up, I haven't seen a second of either of these guys play, so I'm not going to kid myself here, but just the stat that I found, I was like, okay, you win. You get my vote.
Okay. You made a very valid argument till the very end, and I'll have to point something out. They could not have been on the same team together.
Thank you.
Because...
No?
Well, no, because...
They were traded for each other.
They were traded for each other. Atlanta took Luka, and then... the Dallas Mavericks drafted Trae Young and then they swapped. So they wouldn't have been on the same team. They just would have been on the opposite, same teams, but opposite players.
That's how trades work.
That's
okay.
How trade works. yeah. They offered Vince Carter and a really good retirement pension and that, you know, Dallas just wasn't taking it. So, but yeah, no, they wouldn't have been on the same team, just opposing teams. But other than that, for someone that does, like you said, you've never seen these guys play, you don't watch. It's a fair vote. It's a good vote too because he's right there in the conversation and he's probably going to be one of the better players in the league for the foreseeable future. Atlanta's definitely looking to try to build around him. Russ, you're Mr. Stats. I'm sure you've got a lot of them for us. Who are you? If you're going to cast a vote, where's the vote going?
Well, I'll lead right with the stats then. We've got only five players ever that in their rookie season have averaged 18 or more points a game,
yep,
and 7 or more assists per game. Oscar Robertson, Allen Iverson, Damon Stoudemire, Magic Johnson, and Trae Young.
All bums. Every one of them. Never heard of any of them.
Yeah. Only one of them didn't win the Rookie of the Year in the rookie season. And that was Magic because, oh, that guy, you know, Larry Bird, I guess he was there.
Okay.
So am I ready to put Doncic on Larry Bird territory? No, of course I'm not. And my gut tells me this is Luka Doncic's, that was tough, Luka Doncic's award to lose. But I think a lot of it is powered by a really hot start and a really cold start for Trae Young. So he's been chasing him all year long. And I think he's finally caught him because he is just teetering on breaking the 19-point and 8-assist mark.
Mm-hmm.
If he does, he'll only be the third player to have ever done that in his rookie year. Oscar Robertson and Damon Stoudemire being the other two. Man, you get into the conversation with Oscar Robertson and Magic Johnson, I'm going to have a hard time not picking you.
Okay, so you're taking Luka. Got it. no, like I said, there's no right or wrong answer here. Both are very, very deserving of it. As you know, as the person who probably watches the most NBA basketball of all of us,
yep,
I'm going to actually cast my vote in the other direction. I'm going to go with Luka. I've seen both of these guys play. Trae Young to me seems like a very nice, and copycat's the wrong word to use, but it's the word I'm going to use because it best exemplifies what I'm trying to get across. Trae Young looks like a very, very perfect copycat or recreation of a young Steph Curry. They play the same. They're both big three-ball shooters. They, you know, they're going to live and die by that. They're going to beat you by it, because no matter how you guard them, they can always take another step back, and it's just as easy. So that's great for them to have, and that's something I think he's going to make a big career out of. He's definitely going to be, it's going to be him and Steph in conversations for years to come. This is his rookie year, and he doesn't seem to have any fear in being the guy that's going to score for his team. I really like that, and I, you know, he's definitely someone that's going to be in conversations for a long time. When I watch Luka Doncic play, he's a different player. He's just completely different from everyone else. He's a guy that can also beat you outside, but he can get to the basket just as easily. He can do it with both hands. He's proven that. 21 points on a team that's not very good. Almost 8 rebounds, almost 6 assists. He's had more triple-doubles than anyone in a rookie year. And I it's a great list, Russ, and I also know that list. Magic, LeBron, and Jordan. Those are three people that are very good company to be in when you're going to be on a list, and you're ahead of all of them. What's that?
That's a good point.
It's a good point. But that's a great list. I mean, your list is there too. I mean, Oscar Robertson, one of the greatest point guards ever. AI, one of the best scorers of all time. I mean, that list is, it's another list that's very hard to get in front of. But when you're talking about accomplishments, he's the youngest guy to ever record 3 triple-doubles in a season. He's just, he's a next-level player, and he's one of those guys where when you watch it, it was the same as the first time you saw LeBron step on the court. You knew, okay, this guy's not going to be like everyone else. He's gonna be the next big marquee person. It's the same as when Kyrie stepped on the court. Okay, Kyrie's going to revolutionize the game. The Greek Freak. You knew that you weren't going to be seeing everything. You know, you were going to see another cookie cutter of someone else. This guy had his own style. And I just mentioned him being a copycat of him, Steph Curry. He's one of those guys where when you saw him play, you knew, we've never seen this before, and it's not something that we're likely going to see again. And that's what I see with Luka. I see him being, he's a faster, more athletic, more agile Dirk. And I just think if you're going to cast that vote, he's the guy that gets it, because he's just doing everything. He's setting records, and the names he's being mentioned with in these records are just, they're all Hall of Famers and probably top of the list for their position in the game. So I got to go Luka. I got outvoted, so Trae Young's going to win Rookie of the Year, but Luka, you got my vote. You got my vote.
I got a feeling it'll end up being Doncic.
I think it will too. But it's a good debate, because these are both guys who are setting records and making their name, and the people they're being mentioned with are some of the best to ever do it, so you really can't go wrong in that situation. All right, so when we come back, got to take a quick break, promote some website. I don't know, you guys are Sports Radio Detroit. They want us to do stuff for some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah, I hear they're pretty good.
Yeah, it's a rumor, Russ. Don't start rumors on the show. But we're going to do a little break, come right back. We're going to talk some college basketball, going to talk Tigers, and then we got our plays of the week. And I got to tell you, these are some very interesting plays of the week. I mean, they're all outside the box big time. So all that and more when we come back here on Armchair Sports Talk.
Hi, this is Jason Hinken from Pucking Around and Spinning the Wheels on Sports Radio Detroit. Check us out every Sunday over on the SRD Hockey feed on Spotify, TuneIn Radio, Podbean, iTunes, and Stitcher. That's SRD Hockey in your search bar. New episodes every week.
This is Armchair Sports Talk.
All right. We are back here on Armchair Sports Talk, and boys, it is time to talk college basketball. Everybody's bracket still doing okay? Everybody's all right? No one's out of it already?
Yeah. No, I'm good.
Oh, yeah? Okay. You sure about that, Jay?
No. Villanova.
I know. I was just going to say, I bought in to your sale. You sold me on this.
Oh.
And Murray State decided to screw all of us. So that's your fault, Jay. If I don't win any money this year, I'm coming for something. I'm going to break a leg
blaming,
and I'm get something.
You're blaming the wrong Jay. It was the other Jay's fault.
You're talking about Jay Morant?
Yeah, that guy. He fucked me.
He's actually in my list of questions. So we'll jump down. We'll go to that. Russ, and I'll let Jay go here because he brought him up, so he can have first honors. Jay, what is it about college basketball and specifically March Madness where guys who weren't necessarily like entirely off the radar, but weren't exactly center of it. All of a sudden, a couple good games, and they go from late round to even free agent signings to all of a sudden, people are talking about John Morant being a top three pick in the draft. What is it about March Madness and stepping up on that stage that can just elevate a guy from not necessarily nobody, but low bottom to all of a sudden being a top tier player?
For me, there's a little bit of psychology behind it, possibly. I just think when you go from the Super Bowl straight to March Madness, the bread and butter of sports is football. And when football's off the radar and people are just graveling for anything to look at, they turn to college sports. And then what helps the college sporting world is that they're not paid athletes. They're going to get paid. They're working for their future, and they're playing for pride and soul of their teams. So I think when you get that, hey, we're doing this as a unit, and then, hey, there's no football going on, and you have like your office pools and your friend pools, I think it just turns into this perfect storm where players like John Morant or other dudes, like, they're great during the regular season, no one tunes in, and then their worlds just blow up and their futures change. So the players are going to play hard, and we're going to continue to watch every March and hopefully get a vasectomy one day while it happens and enjoy the hell out of it. So it's the perfect storm, I think, for whoever set that up. Kudos to them.
Yeah. Russ, pretty similar opinion there. Any different thoughts on it?
Well, I guess I'll just say that the draft might as well just be power rankings. So if you're going to throw in the mania that is March Madness, and there's only five guys on the court at a time, right? They play most of the game. So you have a guy like Ja absolutely dominate and is the majority of his team. Hey, wins maybe some people some money by getting an upset. That sticks in your head more. You remember that more. The whole regular season doesn't quite matter as much because, wow, look what he did on the big stage against who? And it gets in your head. And there is definitely something very real about that and boosting stock there. I mean, ask Adam Morrison.
I was going to say my example, Adam Morrison's a great example, Jimmer Fredette. BYU.
Oh, yeah, Jimmer.
This guy, he wasn't a bad basketball player, but this guy put BYU on his back, carried them in the tournament, had, you know, these big games, proved his ability to shoot from way outside, goes, I believe, seventh overall to Sacramento. He's not even in the league anymore. He's in Shanghai averaging 50 points a game against people that are a foot shorter than him. So it's that was bad. Oh, God. Okay, that was a bad joke. But
you're not getting
the
laugh today.
No, I'm not laughing for that one. I'm more upset that I even made that joke.
Pay your penance and move on.
Pretty much. But it's just that fact that you have a good couple games, and all of a sudden, these people that have been consistent for 4 years straight, you know, this used to be 4 years. Nobody plays 4 years anymore, and they're going to the NBA. But used to put in the work for a few years and be consistently good, all of a sudden get leapfrogged by a guy who averaged 30 points a game for three games. Of a scene, and then they lost to a real team. So it's very interesting. I think it's one of those things where it to me feels like a huge high risk reward. It's like taking that wide receiver who was not necessarily phenomenal in college, but they go to the combine and run a 4.3 40 and make a couple cool catches, and all of a sudden they go from being unknown and probably a sixth round pick to being one of the top receivers in the draft just because you saw a few little nice things. It feels like that to me. It feels like that, ooh, I got a new shiny toy. I want it kind of thing.
Wow, so, that sounds like DK Metcalf.
I almost said DK Metcalf. I really did. I can't lie. So, and I'm glad you pointed it out because if someone needs to say it. But the big one for me, I want to talk about it because I know we were texting through this game. It was a pretty crazy game. In this game, you got at least three guys. You got Zion, RJ Barrett, and Taco Fall, who are all probably going to be top picks. So, Russ, my question for you: this is a great game. All, you know, Zion gets honorable mention for play of the week in this one. But did UCF expose a weakness or prove that Duke is actually beatable in this tournament?
A little bit, I guess. I mean, from the fact that, hey, it was only a one-point game, yeah, they exposed something. Is it something that another team can replicate easy? Well, A, do you have a 7'6" center?
No? Oh, I didn't think so.
Well, what surprised me, though, is the fact that Taco only had 6 rebounds in that game. For everything he did, you would have thought he had he did a lot more, but I think he ended out with 18 points and, like, 6 rebounds.
Yeah, it wasn't a huge game for him, you know, as Taco fell. Aubrey Dawkins really showed up a whole lot
more.
But
yep.
It is something that, I mean, I didn't take Duke to win at all. I already thought there was a way to beat them, as difficult as it may be.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this more had to do with matchups than Duke not being who we thought they were.
They are who we thought they were.
They crowned them already.
I really wish I had that drop right now. I really did. Okay, I see. I see what you're saying. I do. Jay, I know you pick the same team every year, so you have them being beatable anyway. But in watching this game, did you see a couple, you know, cracks in the armor that is Duke that could make you believe, yeah, this may not be a team that's steamrolling to a title?
Just situationally with UCF, I know Taco Fall wasn't like the big defensive piece, but what they were able to put together with that piece with Taco, it was just enough to stay close with Duke. I don't think anyone's going to be able to replicate that. I don't know how you ball with Duke. I mean, that I don't even know if that was like, you know, Zion was just locked in. Like that last drive, I mean, he spun off the point guard and went up. Like he put that ball right in a perfect window between Taco's arms, right up the middle,
yep.
Which gave him the win. So look at the motor, the energy they're going to be feeding off of that. I don't think Duke can be stopped, and I think that was their best chance of not making it farther.
I agree. I really do. I mean, Russ, you kind of said it best. Do you have a 7-6 player? No, then you probably can't replicate. But
yeah, you're gonna have to come up with a different plan.
Arby Dawkins, 30 plus points. That's something that's going to really help in that contribution. The thing that got me. And I could be alone in this. Obviously, I am a Duke fan. Russ points that out very often. And I do have them winning it all. But the thing that got me is it never should have came down to that. If you watch the last few minutes of that game, Taco Fall should not have been in the game. Taco Fall fouled out like 7 minutes prior when, I'm not going to remember his name now. The RJ Barrett and Zion, then there's a third guy, Cam something.
Cam Reddish,
thank you. When Cam Reddish went up for a layup, and Taco and another guy went up with him, the other guy didn't necessarily foul Cam. Taco closed his arms over him and took him out, and they gave the foul to the other guy. That would have fouled Taco out, and he would not have played the last 7 minutes of that game. So that, to me, was a little bit of a bailout, giving the other guy the call when the other guy didn't really even touch him till after the ball had gone. So it was a bad call there. But I do agree, you don't have 7-6 guys. And to be honest, Zion even proved a 7-6 guy isn't even going to stop him. Zion Williamson is, to me, the best player I've ever watched closely, because he's LeBron's height and weighs 50 pounds more than him, and is still doing everything LeBron does with ease. This guy is a next-level player who's going to go to the NBA, and it's not going to slow him down one bit. So do I think the Duke can be beat? Absolutely. As I said when we were talking Pistons, you can lose on any given night. You can win on any given night. But I just think that, you know what? That, to me, might have been the toughest thing they're going to have to go through. No offense, Jay. I know they're going to probably have to play State at some point, but that might be the toughest thing they're going to have to go through, and I think if they got through that, there might not be anything slowing them down. So it's just how I feel about it. But, Jay, speaking of your Spartans, I want to go through this real quick. Reevaluating after week one, where are you sitting at with the Spartans? Very, very, very scary first game against Bradley. They get through that one, win their next one, and they're sitting comfortably. So where are you sitting right now with your Spartans as we go into this next round of games?
I'm still fine on them. I mean, they had a scary first round, which was giving me flashbacks. Like, I felt like the weather, the time, the temperature was exactly the same when we faced Middle Tennessee. Like, when we were taking care of Bradley, I was just having flashbacks to 2 years ago. But I'm not too worried about them. I am worried about their LSU matchup.
Yep.
But we've got the better defense in that. We're favored by 6. I think if their offense continues to roll, we should be fine. But a little bit of a scare could be a good thing for a team, just not with Izzo, who's, you know, had challenges as of late, and he's chasing a second championship. So I'm still riding them high. Like, I will admit, this is totally not thinking with my head. It's totally heart, so it's a very, very, very big bias, but they've got the better defense against LSU. Let's see them get into the Elite Eight.
All right. My only other question for you, since you are the Spartan fan of our show, and we all went out last weekend, watched some basketball and all that, but I brought it up at the table, and I want you to repeat it now. As a Spartan fan, where do you sit with Izzo talking to his players the way he did in those games when he verbally got in their faces and was very, very confrontational?
It's quick and easy because it's quick and easy. I don't know how else to put it. People should not get upset and offended about things that do not concern them. And the fact that Tom Izzo is in a position of power and supervising his kids, he's got every right to do it. The parents don't mind about it. The players are all about it. The school probably has no issue with it. I've got no issue with it. I don't care. If I do something wrong, a police officer is going to pull me over on the road. He's going to tell me I did it right or I did it wrong. It doesn't matter how he says it. I still effed up, you know?
Yep.
So the fact that there was outrage about Izzo and all that, everyone needs to shut the hell up and let the man coach. That's what he's employed to do. He's getting paid to do it. He's still employed today. That is an understanding that he did just fine on that day when he was yelling at that player. So I have zero issues with it. I hope he does it again.
Okay. Something that was quick and easy just took you a minute and a half to get through.
I'm sorry. You got me all loaded up to that.
Hey, that's quick and easy by some clocks, all right?
That's totally – no, I have no – he was gearing up for it so much with like five its before he said anything that I was expecting it to be like, I loved it. Boom. But I hit the nerve. I got him going, and that's good. That's what we want. So
did you hear the one media take when someone asked him what he did at halftime? He's like, "Oh, we got in the locker room and we hugged each other and we loved each other and we said we'll be fine." Like, totally being coy with the media. It was hilarious.
Well, when they brought it up to him after that game, he even said, "You know, I'm going to start lying to you guys," because he got sick of, you know, what do you want to hear? Like, I'm a basketball coach. I know how to motivate my guys. I mean, and to be fair, he clearly does. He's been doing this for 30 years. He's got that to be one of the most successful basketball programs in recent history. I think he knows what he's doing. He's not just going to one day see a wire snap and just flip out. He's not Bobby Knight. He's not going to choke one of his players out. He knows what to do to motivate, and it clearly worked, because at the moment he did that, Bradley looked to have the edge. Sure enough, after he did it, State turned it on and went and got going again. So I'm with you on that. I saw a tweet last week. I mentioned to you that someone said, "I would be honored to have Izzo coach my son." And I don't know a lot of people who have kids that are a son that's going to play basketball who you could honestly say you'd be upset to see Tom Izzo coach your kids. The only guy who I think would be better is John Beilein. And so,
hey.
Yeah, there you go. So now we're going to flip over to Michigan. Russ, we play Texas Tech tonight.
Yep.
Michigan has not looked bad in this tournament, but I will say that Michigan has not fallen, but seems to have adjusted back into their old ways of, we're going to live and die by the three. Fair to say?
Yeah, it is. But the one encouraging thing is they are doing the Michigan thing of holding their opponents and very, very much limiting their offense.
I exactly.
Mean, 55 points to Montana. Oh, okay, it's Montana. I'm not going to get too worried about it. Second straight year of doing this. Florida only scored 49 points. And the game, I mean, yeah, at halftime, I think it was a four-point game. But it never really felt that threatening after that.
Uh-oh.
So what do we get?
I apologize. Tiger just had a home run in the extra innings. My bad. That was unprofessional.
Hey! Breaking news.
Sorry. Continue.
No worries. I mean, by the time anyone listens to this, maybe I'll have just put my foot in my mouth. But I like the way Michigan is going. Their bread and butter this year has been their defense. Second best adjusted defense in the nation. And it's clicking right now. Texas Tech happens to have the first. But Michigan's just come out and they've looked good. Texas Tech hasn't been as dominant defensively. So I'm going to give it the edge to Michigan because they seem to be doing what they do well better than Texas Tech right now. it's going to be tough. And, man, that's a late one that's probably not going to have a lot of scoring in it. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
Pop a Monster Energy or something.
That's fair. My only other question for you, and this one's a little more fun, Russ, when it comes to U of M basketball, is there anything more exhilarating but at the same time more horrifying and scary than when Xavier Simpson shoots a skyhook?
Oh, my God.
The guy's 5'11", doing skyhooks from, like, the three-point line.
It is fantastic to watch because it's, oh, how's he going to – oh, he's doing that again. Hey, it worked. Every single time it surprises me. It shouldn't. It really shouldn't because this is his signature move. But, man, it is fun to watch.
It is. CJ, little people can score basketball shots, too.
Oh, I know we can.
Yeah,
we're very talented people.
All right. Last question before we talk about baseball. It's a real quick one. I just kind of want to get a yes or no fast answer. So, Jay, you said quick earlier. Let's be quick this time. it's an opinion question, but, Jay, I'll let you go first here. Has this year just been a little less Cinderella-y, or Cinderella? I don't even know how to pluralize this word. Have we seen a little less Cinderella in this year's tournament than years past for you? Has it kind of been a 1-2-3, just kind of scooting along kind of thing?
So far, yeah. I mean, you know, you got the Purdue's of the world in Tennessee, and I'll keep it short. Yes, it has been less Cinderella-y.
Okay. Russ?
Absolutely. First year that we haven't had an 11 play-in seed make it out of the first round. Where is my Cinderella?
Find the glass slipper.
I'm right here.
I'm right here.
Oh, put that to bed.
Yeah.
That's three thus far, shooter,
yeah. Okay, I agree with you guys, though. This has just, to me, kind of seemed like the top names are just kind of scooting along, doing what they do. I mean, to me, the big upset for me has been that I had Syracuse going a lot farther than they did. So, it just, to me, has been a very 1-2-3 across the boards just seem to be getting there. Wouldn't surprise me that our national championship and Final Fours are going to be ones and twos. So, we'll see what happens. Last one. Jay, I think you kind of buried the lead there a little bit with giving us the ahead. So, they won that game 2-0. Is that what we're saying?
Top of the 10th. Tigers got a man on first, and they got two runs.
Top of the 10th, two runs in. You say guy on first, two outs. Okay. So, fingers crossed this should be all right, but we'll see what happens.
That was rookie Kristen Stewart who hit that homer.
Yep.
All right.
Castellanos on deck, Miguel Cabrera in the hole. So, we'll see what happens there. But we want to talk Tigers baseball. Obviously, we did our best to cover the Tigers last year. Wasn't always the easiest. There are so many games. It's tough to, you know, to recap. You know, when we're covering Lions and Red Wings and Pistons, there's two, maybe three games a week. When you cover that, when we do a once a week show, you're talking having to talk about potentially five or six games, and that's not always easy to do. So, as we look to this, looks like they're going to maybe get the W. Should be good. Russ, my first question is kind of the deciding question. Is 55 to 60 wins a ceiling for the Tigers this year? Is that about the best we could probably hope for this ball club?
I'm going to say no. The ceiling's probably a little bit higher.
Really?
The more I looked at this team, and I was looking up odds last night, the over-under is hovering somewhere around 68.5 wins.
Okay.
Now, that they had 64 last season. So it's not a large departure from that, but we get a full season of Cabbie again. Now it's a 35-year-old Cabbie, who knows. And we've lost some other pieces, and there's probably going to be some pieces, Castellanos, that get traded off later in the season. But this AL Central's bad. Dude, it's super bad. One division in baseball last year had more than two teams, more than one team with more than 90 losses,
yeah.
Sorry. The AL Central had three. This is bad. It's going to be the Indians, maybe the Twins, and then some garbage. And that's going to prop up the Tigers' win totals.
Okay, so if I had to put you on the spot here, give me a number. What's the exact number you're going to put for the Tigers for wins this year?
Well, Gronk just retired, so 69.
My guy, do it.
Wait, your guy, Gronkowski retired, so what?
69.
Okay, attaboy. Attaboy. All right, so we got 69. Jay, it's kind of the same question for you, man. I mean, you look at this Tigers team. We've been kind of watching the game as we're doing this show, following it where we can. Looking at a very small sample size, can this team really hope to get above 60 wins this year? Russ has them at 69, so almost 70. So I'll say 65 as the, you know, the plateau.
I was thinking about that too. It's just that this team, like the past 2 years and going into this year, their roster has just been so fluid between injuries and trades. And, you know, we lose Fulmer. We don't have Jacoby Jones right now. We finally get Miggy back, and like Russ said, he's a year older. They've got so many moving parts to this team that I don't think they're going to come close to 60. I think they're going to be under that. You know, even if we get some chemistry and the boys start buzzing and they get to a certain point, like, all right, well, then the rug's ripped out, because then we're going to have trades and we're going to move pieces because we're still rebuilding on the go. So I just, whatever we might conjure up together, I don't know if they can sustain it because they're so fluid. So I don't see them getting over 60 this year.
All right. So what's the number?
Put me at 59, 10 less than the other magical number.
All right, so you guys kind of made this easy for me. I'm going to exactly split the difference here and go with, not really split the difference, but as close as I can, 65. I'm going to say 65. I think this is a team that they're gonna be good for some parts, and it's going to be unbearable to watch for other parts. But I think if they can get enough hot streaks going, there's no reason this team can't get above 60, get to 65. I mean, as I said, I'm kind of the optimist here when it comes to Detroit sports, and I want to say that this team is going to do it. But, you know, Jay, you mentioned it. No Fulmer, no Jacoby right now. It's just there are a few too many things that have to go right for this team to be that much better, and I don't know that they will. So I'm going to say 65. I think it's a good number. I think it's, you know, it's about as successful as we can hope to be. But as we lean into it, there are two main things I feel like we have to talk about when it comes to the Detroit Tigers. And my first one's going to be for you, Jay, since you brought him up in your little analysis. He's a little older. He's not really the same guy he used to be. What can we realistically hope for out of Miguel Cabrera this year?
Oh, God. You know, outside of the obvious of being healthy.
Hoping he'll be healthy. The guy hasn't been healthy for a full year in God knows how long.
2016 was the last time he even came close to playing a full season.
Yeah.
Jesus. I mean, this team, obviously, you know, they lean on him. They lean on him to not only, you know, go up and have good at-bats, but also to be that voice in the room for them. So, yeah. If anything, you know, just mentoring the rest of the guys on the team, just trying to bring a semblance of chemistry for them. It's all the intangibles and all the, like, the, you know, the talking quotes that you could throw in there. It's just, it's hard to judge it statistically, so I'm leaning on him more, you know, emotionally and chemistry. I don't even know how to do that word. Just the chemistry of the team. I want him to be the glue in the fabric of the team, basically, and that's all I would expect out of him at where he's at in his career and health-wise.
Intangibles.
Intangibles, that a boy.
Yeah, that's, thank you. Man, falling off right. The deep end over here on the tail end of this.
Russ, I'm with Jay on that. I think he needs to move more into a veteran role here and understand that he's not going to be, you know, Mr. 40 home runs anymore. I mean, you'd love to see it, but, you know, numbers just are numbers. It's probably a very thin chance. I mean, when you look at Miguel Cabrera, are we looking at a guy that can still go for 275 and, you know, at least 25 home runs? And I mean, I don't think 100 RBIs is plausible, but can he at least get above 80?
I think he'll get a little bit above 80. And honestly, more of that has to do with the cast around him.
Yeah.
You got to have people on to drive him in. And, oh boy, this team. They might be okay. He'll get some chances. I think 275, I would almost put him as a lock to get above 275. 25 homers is probably the ceiling.
Okay.
Had 16 back in 2017 when he played 130 games. Had 38 back in 2016 when he played 158. that's probably a bit much. That was 3 years and several injuries ago. So I kind of see him transitioning his game kind of like Victor did. You know, keeps the smarts, keeps the ability to spray across the field, but the power is going to go a little bit. You injure the knees, the back, you get older, it starts to sap away. And the only way they're helping that is can't make him an everyday first baseman. Got to try and work him in the DH when you can. Hicks can play first. We saw it last year.
Mm-hmm. Listen, 40 home runs is a pipe dream. My only thing for you, Russ, is are you thinking that this, like, you know, the guy had a pretty elongated rest getting hurt early on last year. You don't think the amount of rest could potentially be a good contribution for him? He's well rested. He's not going off a long grind, getting that little break, and then going into another long grind.
I think I kind of took that into consideration with his batting average jumping back up. I just don't know that he's – look, I think he'll get to 20. More than 25 homers, it's pushing it.
Okay.
He looks to be back healthy. He is a little bit bigger than he was before, though, which, again, does happen with age. Just ask Cecil Fielder how that went. But he's going to do more with his batting average than his batting power.
Okay, that's fair. My last thing for you guys, we talked about it with the Pistons. We've talked about it with the Red Wings. Let's talk about it with the Tigers because, Russ, you mentioned a name you wanted to bring up as a player we have. But assuming, and I'm going to try to set you up so you can work it in perfectly. Assuming, Russ, that this team doesn't get out to the, nice start and can't keep it going and as we get to halfway point a little on, we're starting to notice, okay, maybe 50 wins is a real hope.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see this team as one that should kind of adopt the Red Wings mantra of let's get some youth playing, let's get the AAA guys up here, let's get some experience because we're not going to be good this year, probably not going to be good next year. Let's get some as much experience as we can so we know who we're working around and who we're not. Breaking news, Tigers win 2-0 on their road opening day against the Toronto Blue Jays. But Russ, for you, is this a team that should be starting to look to the youth and getting them in and get, I mentioned Mize is a player that needs to play. Where are you sitting with that?
No, I absolutely, especially the second half of the season. I mean, you got to do the start. It's a long season and it's a slog of a season. So you can't go ahead and pull up the young guys who never played 162 games and start them from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But no, they absolutely should in the second half of the season. Guys like Manning, Daz Cameron, Bo Burrows, yeah, pull them up at the end. Get them a cup of coffee. See what it is. Because you're right, this team is not making the playoffs. Baseball playoffs might be the toughest to make just because of how few teams make it and how long the season is.
Exactly.
But Kristen Stewart, Candelario, this is their team. Castellanos, I hope he plays great so that we can maximize his return. I'm rooting for the guy.
Wait, the girl from Twilight plays for the Tigers?
It is spelled differently, thank you very much.
Oh, okay, just checking. I wanted to make sure someone else heard that.
Today, so damn it, we respect him.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry. That's my fault. That is my fault. I mean, yeah.
I'm a big fan. It's a good show.
Yeah, that's my fault. I'm a big fan.
No, and him and Candelario are going to be a lot of the reason to watch, until they start bringing up some of these young guys. There's a lot of young arms in the system that could have a lot of talent. Don't burn them out early, but bring them out at the end of the year and get a taste of it. Let them see what it's like because, this is a builder.
Same as like with Zadina and those guys. Let them at least see some playing time, get some experience. It's not the same as in Grand Rapids or in Toledo and all that. Get some experience. Jay, I know you. You're Mr. Sink it as low as you can, draft as high as you can. Is that if like I said, if we get to the All-Star break or we get a little past it and it's starting to look like 50 wins might be the highest we can hope for, are you all for saying, all right, Miggy, take a seat. Castellanos, let's relax. Zimmer, you're gonna get a break. Let's let these young guys get a shot. We're not going anywhere. Let's get the youth some experience.
I mean, I'm all about the experience for youth, but I think what Russ touched on when we started the segment on Tigers is that our division is so lousy that you know, I think that's going to dictate part of it too. If we have some good competitiveness in the division and, you know, we kind of are forced into that, then yeah, bring up the rookies. But if we're going to be so bad that we always have a fighting shot, you know, they gotta toe that line between trading off assets and, you know, staying competitive and letting the younger talent develop down south, be it the Mud Hens or wherever they're at. So I think that will work itself out as the division either is good or continues to be lousy.
Okay, that's great. I just broke my chair, so that's a lot.
You weren't so you weren't listening.
No, I listened. I genuinely was listening to everything you said, and I knew you were wrapping up, so I stretched one time to like go forward, and the back of the chair just cracked. Oh, so
it's okay, Eric. Sitting is hard.
Sitting is very hard.
Is it opening day for the Tigers or for this podcast? Jesus.
Apparently, yeah, we're rookie today. This is a good one. Anyway, I'm with you guys. Get some youth in there. Let them get some experience. They are the future of the team. Let's do it. Last thing, we haven't done it in a few, but we wanted to do it, and that's play of the week. And like I teased earlier, this week's play of the weeks they're a little different. They're not necessarily what we would, you know, have. They're not big high flying dunks, not necessarily, you know, crazy goals. They're just a little more fun, a little more enjoyable. And I think we can attribute that to the fact that we all...
And when I woke up this morning, I was feeling pretty dangerous.
We decided to be risky this week. So we're going to lead it off with Russ. Russ, you went with one that I'm kind of excited to hear why you picked it. But I also want to know your thoughts on the fact that, if I read correctly, they're done doing this now as the playoffs are coming up for them.
They are. And it was addressing the elephant in the room of, all right, what do you do in the playoffs? Do you continue this dog and pony show on the biggest stage when you have to see the same team the next night?
Yeah.
And they just kind of cut and ran with it. And I understand the decision. I'm a little disappointed because, hey, this is a ton of fun, and that's why I picked this.
Okay. So here's Russ's play of the week, and then, Russ, you can kind of give us the explanation of what it is and why you went with it. Here's Russ's play of the week.
Here we go. All you need is Meadowlark Lemon. Trevor Van Riemsdyk fiddling, diddling, and dunking it home!
He traveled.
They allow that. It's all good. It's all for entertainment purposes only.
All right. So I like that one. I think that one's pretty entertaining. Russ, I mean, obviously, it's hockey, but it's hockey with some fun. What about this one stood out to you as the best thing of the week?
Well, first off, I take a little umbrage with your we're not picking any high-flying dunks.
That's my fault. That's true.
That was a high-flying dunk.
Absolutely. He got an inch. He got higher than Phil Mickelson when he celebrated his first Masters victory.
Yep.
For those of you who don't know, you couldn't fit a piece of paper under Phil when he jumped. So
it was an inch and a quarter, and damn it, every inch counts. But take it this way. It's March in North Carolina, and we're talking about a slam dunk that happened on an ice rink. Like that's how special this is. We're not talking about Duke. We're not talking about North Carolina. We're talking about a Carolina Hurricanes team that is getting national buzz for this thing that we're doing.
Yep.
And reminding us not only that, hey, there's another Van Riemsdyk brother. Whoa, who knew? But also that hockey is fun and should be fun. And that's what they're doing out here. I absolutely love it. It's been the storm surge and it's been gritty that have taken over the NHL. And I'm here for it. Let's keep it going.
Okay. We're already off the rails anyway, so I'm going to ask this question. I didn't want to interrupt you because you were talking. every inch counts. Is that what you had to tell girls over the years? Just
no, out of curiosity? No. Actions speak louder than words.
Perfect. That's great. Speaking of someone who will take every inch he can get, Jay, I like your play of the week. I showed this one to Erin, and she thought it was awesome watching these two just try to kill each other. So here's your play of the week, and then you can give us your reasoning why.
Noel Achari and Mackenzie Weegar just for fun. Achari with a couple of lefts. It's Rock'em Sock'em Robots, and Achari just puddles Weegar. Unanimous decision. No need for punch count here.
Throwing some haymakers for sure. Jay, what was it about this play that stood out to you and you wanted it to be your play of the week?
So part of the thing is I have a huge fascination with Boston this year, and I'm most likely going to be picking them to win the cup.
Okay.
But Noel Achari, for Boston. He rides the fourth line, and between him and Backes, they're doing a hell of a job fighting in the NHL. And yep. Fighting is something that I hold near and dear to my heart in the NHL. I know the NHL is trying to publicize the league in a different way so it's not taking center stage, but this is the only national league that you can fight in still, and it's allowable. It's just fine. The fight itself, tremendous. Like that, there's no sizing each other up. There's no nothing. It's just throw bombs left and right. Weegaard did fine holding up himself as well, but just that fight is going to be huge for Boston because that's your fourth line center who's going ham for you night in and night out. And I'm just – Achari doesn't put many points on the board. I think he's got 12 so far, but for the 200 and I think 11th fight on the year so far, it was a dandy. And I think it's going to propel Boston into the playoffs, so I liked it a lot.
All right. You know me. I'm always down for a good fight on the hockey rink. It's always a good time. Like you said, he's not really a big contributor in that, you know, in the statistical way, but he's, you know, he's one of those guys that'll get you going. And Jay picking Boston for a Stanley Cup, I
know.
I feel like hell has frozen over. It really has. Next thing you're going to tell me is that Brad Marchand's going to be the winner of the MVP.
I'm starting to like the rat every single day. Oh, I really am. Oh,
cut his mic.
Oh my God!
What are you talking about?
Not even what are you talking about?
Why are you the way that you are?
Good God, man! What is wrong with you?
Have you no decency, man?
No, he doesn't.
All right, so take the B off his sweater and put him in a winged wheel. Tell me you don't appreciate Marchand night
Justin,
night out.
Justin,
if everything you're doing is bad. I want you to know this.
Everything you're doing is bad right now. It's terrible. No, I'm sorry, Jay. Listen, we can have this debate all you want. Put him in any sweater, not Boston. Put him in a wing sweater. He's still Brad Marchand. He's still that guy who licked someone last year. He's terrible. I don't want him anywhere near Detroit. I don't even like it when he's in the city just to play us, okay? There's something going on with you right now, and I don't know what it is, but it's horrifying. You need to fix it. Fix it now.
Okay, Don Jerry.
Good God almighty, man. Holy hell. You know what? Listen, this show's gone too bad.
Fuck this. You all suck. I quit.
I'm done.
Am I getting a one game suspension?
You are getting
this?
A one game. You will be back for Masters talk in 2 weeks. That's what we're gonna have happen here. Mine actually, you know, is golf. It's time for me to start talking about golf because it's been long enough. The cold winter polar vortex is over. So my play is actually an athletic play that someone. I mean, if you can call it athletic, it's a pastime play. Tiger Woods playing in the WGC match play this week decided that, you know what, I'm not going to take the drop. I'm just going to do a crafty thing that no one else can do, and I'm going to make it look easy. Tiger got down on his knees under a bush, turned his club over so he was swinging left-handed, took a nice little whack at it, and put it about 2 feet from the hole.
Hit his second over the green. This is his third.
Lefty off your knees. When did you practice that one?
Holy kidding. Was ridiculous.
How good is that?
Let me tell you, you might not see a better shot all week.
Oh, yeah.
That was spectacular.
That, to me, has to be the play. I mean, like I said, Zion gets honorable mention, but what Tiger did in that play is just, it's phenomenal. It shows why he is one of the greatest to ever do what he does. Shows why he's one of the most lucrative athletes. He's just got so much appeal. He's not afraid to try the risk and the crazy. And it's fun to watch. I mean, Ross, I know you're not a big golf guy. Jay, I know you know during the majors and that, you and I will text back and forth on this stuff. But, I mean, you saw it. You watched it. Tiger doing that is just what we've come to expect out of Tiger. Anything, a flub, a miss, no one expects that anymore. We all expect him to drain that kind of shot.
Yeah, it was absolutely gorgeous, man. I watched it the first time. I was like, oh, hot damn, okay, I see you. And then I was like, his club is upside down. It's like, what are you doing?
Just for the viewers, because they need it. Russ, can you please tell us what you responded with when I sent you that video? Because I thought it was amazing.
Well, I thought, man, isn't this the same guy that got in trouble for putting his stick in some strange bush? Like, he's divorced right now because he was getting down and dirty, make, you know, putting it at weird angles like this.
Oh, and you know what, though? Honestly, that's how we're ending the show. That was just too good, too perfect. Listen, guys, this one was a little all over the place, but it was fun. We got to cover some stuff. Tigers got their first win of the year. That's always a great thing. Pistons need to keep winning to get in the playoffs. Next couple weeks, we're going to actually have to start doing playoff predictions for hockey and for basketball. We've got Masters predictions coming up. Jay and I, it's one of our favorite times of the year. Russ, not so much, but we're going to find some guys with some crazy-ass names that Russ can pick because he likes that so much. As always, my thanks to Russ Ivanek, Statman, making us sound smarter than we really are.
Oh, it's a pleasure. And I'd just like to point out, today I closed the book on the journal I've been using since we started this podcast. Finally filled it out, boys. 59 episodes. 70 sheets front and back.
Nicely done.
It will be missed. It will be missed. And Russ, I don't think you're going to have a hard time saying this for me. Go blue.
Go blue.
Go blue all the
Red
way.
Raiders.
Oh, all yeah. J. Marcus, man, we always appreciate it, buddy. You're the heartbeat of Detroit. Give us that opinion of the fans, and we love it, buddy.
Hey, I'm always happy to be here. I hope I'm here next week if the suspension doesn't get carried out. So. I have to put my team on the appeal.
I will make you a deal that you can be back next week if you don't ever mention Brad Marchand again unless it's warranted.
Oh, I can't make that deal.
Justin will no longer be on the show, everybody, but we tried. And as always, I'm your host, Eric Dorsch. One small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response, were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought? Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.